We're going to talk about the state of hate and extremism in America this hour with a guest who has authored a report on the number of radical groups that exist around the country. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March 6th. According to this report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the year in hate and extremism, the number of hate groups, and especially the number of anti-government or patriot groups, have declined since the re-election of President Obama in 2012. We'll talk about why this is and whether this trend will continue or not, and why our guest says there's still plenty of room for concern. And we'll wonder if you share that concern and what questions you have at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Mark Potok, a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center, editor of the group's quarterly journal, The Intelligence Report, and author of this annual report that we'll discuss this hour, The Year in Hate and Extremism. Good morning.
Well, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks very much for being with us. So this report looks at the year 2013.
Yeah, that's right. Every year I write this essay to look back at what happened over the previous year, based really on our counts of these groups. This is something we've been doing for quite a few years, about 30 years now, counting groups and tracking their numbers.
Mm-hmm. And what is the count for 2013?
Well, I mean, let me give a little context. What we saw an extraordinary, really a kind of stunning rise in the groups generally, and in particular the patriot groups, what we all used to call militia groups, beginning with the election of Obama. They absolutely took off. So by our count, there were a mere 149 of them in 2008. In 2009, that jumped to 512, the next year to 824, the year after that, 1,274, and in 2012, the peak, 1,360. So we'd really never seen any rise like that before in our counting at all. And it was over 800% jump.
And this is attributed to the election of President Obama?
In large part. There were very large numbers of Americans who were uncomfortable seeing a black man enter the White House. But I think it was not only animus directed at him personally, but really a larger discomfort with what's going on in the country as a whole. And by that I mean the idea that white people in the United States are very much on their way to losing their majority. The Census Bureau has predicted that by about 2043, non-Hispanic whites will fall below 50% of the population. For the first time, obviously. At this point, the country's about 78% white. So there are a lot of changes going on. And the changes are also political and cultural, things like the advance of same-sex marriage and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, Obama's election coincided very neatly with the collapse in the economy, in particular the subprime crisis in October of 2008, if I remember, and then all that followed.
Well,
so there were some other reasons, but those were the two main drivers, I think, of that huge rise.
So I know we'll get calls that there are going to be some people who say, hey, I joined a patriot group or a Tea Party group because I was concerned about the economy and the debt, and I'm not a hater.
Well, the Tea Parties are not listed by us as these groups, for one thing, and I think it's certainly more true in the Tea Party world that, you know, that was really a kind of economic populism and was less. I mean, I think it's undeniable that there was some racism in the Tea Party movement. I think we all saw that in the kinds of signs that were carried and many of the statements made. But there's, first of all, a lot of difference from Tea Party to Tea Party. And second of all, I don't think that's their dominant characteristic at all. So on the other hand, the patriot groups are in a different place. And I'd like to sort of say something. Kind of unvarnished Klan-like racism that I'm talking about at all. It's more diffuse. It's more, this is not the country I grew up in, the country my forefathers built. It looks different, more different every day. You know, there's no longer a place for me in this world. I don't feel comfortable. It's a sort of diffuse feeling in that way. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we'll, I'm sure, deal with that issue a little bit later. So you're not including a Tea Party group in the Patriot Group category?
No, I think we list one Tea Party group, Tea Party Nation, which clearly does have racist aspects to it. But no, by and large, the Tea Parties are not listed at all in our counts.
So what then happened, though, with the reelection of President Obama? Now the numbers have declined.
Yeah, let me explain. At the same time, we saw much slower and steadier growth in hate groups, by which I mean Klan groups, neo-Nazi groups, anti-Muslim groups, anti-gay groups, and so on. And that's been going all the way back to 2000 or thereabouts. What happened last year in 2013 was both the hate groups and the patriot groups fell. The hate groups by little, by about 7%. They fell from about 1,007 groups to 939 by our counts. The patriot groups, the militia groups, fell from 1,360 to 1,096, which is about a 19% drop. So that's fairly significant. Why? I think there are a whole array of reasons, but one of the key reasons is, in fact, the reelection of Barack Obama. And you know, I realize that sounds a little contradictory in the sense that we think that it was his election that drove the growth of these groups initially. But I think after 4 years, there was a strong feeling on the radical right as well as big sections of the more mainstream right that Obama had to lose. That surely this terrible person, this person who had been pilloried by the right for so long, couldn't possibly be reelected. And he was. And at the same time, we had other things going on, like I mentioned before, the advance, the very really kind of incredibly rapid advance of same-sex marriage, of changing attitudes about same-sex marriage. So I think, and there are a number of other issues as well. So I think there was a real feeling of deflation, like they had given it their very best to get this sort of demon president out of office and, in fact, had failed. You know, I think there are a lot of other factors that went into the decline, and it's hard to say at this point whether that decline will continue, whether we've really kind of peaked out and now we're going to see these groups decline for a number of years, or whether it's a kind of aberration.
Well, we'll talk about some of the other factors that might be involved in this decline of hate groups in America and whether this trend will continue or not, what factors might be involved. And we'll welcome your reactions and your questions for our guest. What do you think of this decline? Do you think it's permanent, temporary? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Mark Potok. He is with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and we're talking about the center's annual report, The Year in Hate and Extremism. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. According to a new report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, there has been a decline in the number of hate groups in America in the past year. We are talking about what factors are involved in the decline and whether or not the trend will continue. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March 6th. We welcome your questions for our guest from the Southern Poverty Law Center at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take our first caller, Pat, in Iron River. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Joy. I'd like to ask this fellow how he decides that Hispanic Americans shouldn't be categorized as... they should be categorized as other than white when they're just as white as white. And that would go the same for any other branch of white people.
You know what? We're losing you, Pat, and I'm not sure what your point is there. I think he wants to know.
Yeah, let me explain. Yeah. I understand what he's saying. I mean, it's a silly accusation that, you know, we're somehow manipulating the data. This is the way the Census Bureau does the data. And, you know, it's not something we don't run the government as it happens, and that's the way the counting is done.
Yeah, well, I think
they separate. You know, Hispanics can be. I mean, in fact, despite what the caller said, Hispanics obviously can be black. They can be white. It could be quite a lot of things in between.
Mm-hmm. Well, the caller told our on air producer that he wanted to know who. You know, how do you determine who's a hate group?
Well, our listings of hate groups are based strictly on ideology. They are not based on criminality or some estimate we're making for the potential for violence or anything like that. It's all about ideology. Does a group say in its platform statements, on its website, in the speeches or writings of its leader, that an entire group of human beings is somehow less by virtue of their class characteristics? All white people are blue-eyed devils. All black people are criminals. All the Jews are this or that. It's those kinds of things that form the basis of our listing these groups.
Mm-hmm. And are there, talking about radical right, are there radical left groups involved here too?
There is a very small radical left in the United States these days, despite what you hear on the right. I mean, it is tiny, certainly compared to what it once was. 60s and 70s, and certainly compared to the radical right. So you know, what I mean by that is there are groups like the Animal Liberation Front, the Earth Liberation Front, what the FBI sometimes calls eco-terrorists, quote-unquote, and these are groups that have been involved in things like burning down ski resorts and SUV dealerships and so on. One thing that the groups on the kind of the radical environmental left have not done, though, is kill anyone, at least to date.
Mm-hmm. And what about if a group is a religious group that is opposed to same-sex marriage, does that mean it's a hate group?
No. And despite some propaganda from the far right about this issue, we absolutely do not list groups on the basis of opposition to same-sex marriage, nor do we list groups on the basis of saying that they believe that homosexuality is a sin, that Leviticus describes homosexuality as a sin.
But they are listed if they go beyond a religious statement in opposition of same-sex marriage?
Yeah, well, what we say is, with respect to the anti-gay groups, is that, you know, we will list the groups, and we do list a few, if they engage this is the language we used at the time, in the propagation of known falsehoods that are defamatory in nature. There are a number of different examples of that, but the primary one, the one that quite a number of groups engage in, is the completely false allegation that gay men molest children at higher rates, and many of the groups argue at vastly higher rates, than straight men. That's simply false, and yet groups like the American Family Association make that case every day.
Robin writes on Facebook, decreased by what, 70 out of, and she goes on to list some of the statistics and then saying that she's still very concerned by the number of hate groups that still exist. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think she's right, and I try and make the same point in the essay that I wrote. The fact is that when you look at patriot groups, militia groups, and hate groups together, we still have more than 2,000 groups in the United States. That is almost twice as many groups as we had at a previous peak in 1996, which was kind of the peak of the first wave of the militia movement, just a year after the Oklahoma City bombing. So there are still a lot of groups out there, and of course there are a lot of people who may not be involved in groups at all who are very angry in some cases at the direction the country's going. When you look at the kinds of episodes of domestic terrorism, or at least attempted domestic terrorism, over the last year, that doesn't seem to be particularly diminishing. We had a number of cases, and some of them fairly hair-raising cases. A Klansman last year was arrested in upstate New York in the middle, allegedly, of building an X-ray weapon an incredible thing, with which he allegedly intended to murder thousands of Muslims.
Yeah. So the KKK is still alive and well in this country.
Well, it's alive. I'm not sure I'd call it well. There are quite a lot of chapters, getting up towards 200 claverns, as they call them. But I would also say that, in all of those groups together, there may be 7,000 or 8,000 people. The Klan, really, first of all, is not one Klan like there once was. These are 30 or 40 different named Klan groups, all competing with each other. And I would say that the other groups on the radical right, by and large, very much look down their nose at the Klan. They see the Klan as being an organization of sort of uneducated rural people, that kind of thing. So the Klan, I think, is far less important to the radical right than it obviously once was.
Nancy in Janesville emails, did the count look only at the numbers of groups, or did it count membership numbers as well? If so, has that number also declined?
Well, it's a good question, but it's, I think, an unanswerable one. Really, the reason that we began counting groups so many years ago was that it was virtually impossible to even remotely accurately count members. First of all, the groups, insofar as they talk about their membership at all, routinely lie about it. I mean, groups will claim they have 40,000 members when they have 40. And then there's, of course, no way of checking on that with any accuracy. In some cases, we have a very good idea about how many people are in a particular group, but in the vast majority of cases, no. So this is, I don't claim that the group count is the very best data that one could possibly have, but I think it's the very best data that can be gotten as a practical matter. In any case, that for us is kind of the benchmark that we look at and try and understand what's going on.
Nancy goes on in her email to ask, did you interview members about attitudes? Perhaps some of these groups simply moved into mainstream political groups that seem more comfortable.
I think there's something to that. One of the reasons that we kind of adduce in talking about the decline in these groups is the way that many of their issues have been adopted, essentially co-opted, by people, politicians, in the relatively mainstream political world. And what I mean is the adoption of certain issues really by state legislatures. So anti-Muslim groups, for instance, have been beating the drum since 2010 about the alleged threat of Sharia law, of Islamic religious law being imposed on the United States. It's a completely bogus fear. In fact, that is completely out of the question given the Constitution that we have. Nevertheless, seven states around the country have already adopted anti-Sharia laws, so-called the law called American Laws for American Courts. So we see these ideas moving into state legislatures, and there have certainly been a number of others. The rash of nullification laws we've seen, at least proposed in just the last few months, is another example of that. Laws that say, for instance, that federal gun regulations cannot be imposed in a certain state. We just say, you can't come into our state. There are other laws saying no federal law enforcement, or proposals, I should say, saying that no federal law enforcement agencies can come into our state at all without the permission of the local sheriff. And if they do, they can be arrested and tossed into jail on a felony. These are very radical ideas. They're clearly not constitutional. They rely on the doctrine of nullification, which was really the doctrine that was used to defend slavery in the South and after the Civil War to defend segregation in the South, the idea that the federal government couldn't force the states to desegregate and so on. So what I'm arguing is that the co-optation of those issues has, in a sense, kind of taken the wind out of the sails of the radical right. We saw a very similar thing a few years ago with some of the very hardline anti-immigration groups, the Minuteman groups that were patrolling the southern border and so on. Once legislatures in places like Alabama, where I am, and Arizona passed extremely harsh anti-immigrant laws, the Minuteman groups essentially collapsed.
Yeah, so maybe it took the wind out of the sails, but it means that those sales are in state legislatures and in Congress.
Yeah, I'm not painting a very rosy picture. I think that's true. It is very arguable whether that's an improvement. And, one thing that I think is certain to happen is that these laws will be knocked down one by one if they are passed as they go to court and their constitutionality is challenged. In the meantime, it's been rather ugly. I mean, one thinks of the law that was vetoed by Governor Brewer in Arizona, but very nearly became law, the law that would have allowed institutions simply not to serve gay people because they didn't, because they didn't agree with their lifestyle according to their sincerely held religious convictions.
Well, we'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue examining this report from the Southern Poverty Law Center on the year in hate and extremism. This report found that the number of hate groups, especially the number of anti-government so-called patriot groups, have declined since the re-election of President Obama in 2012. But our guest says there's still plenty of room for concern, and we're talking about what factors are involved, and we'll talk more when we come back over whether this trend will continue or not and what might be involved with that. And we're welcoming your reactions and your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, March 6th. According to a report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, the number of hate groups in America has declined since the re-election of President Obama in 2012. We're talking about why this is and whether the trend is likely to continue with a guest who says that there is still plenty of room for concern. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and you will find on Facebook this report from the Southern Poverty Law Center. It's linked there. It's called Hate and Extremism, the Year in Hate and Extremism. Our guest is Mark Potok. He is one of the country's leading experts on extremism, and he serves as editor-in-chief of the Southern Poverty Law Center's quarterly journal, The Intelligence Report. He is also a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And let's go back to the phones. Greg in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Greg.
Hello. I think we have a lot of hate in the United States right now. When the Speaker Boehner wouldn't even answer, call up President Obama back, that's total disrespect. And then I see the entire Tea Party. Scott Walker's cutting everything out for the poor and giving everything away in tax breaks to the rich.
Well, we talked a little bit about you're not including Tea Party as a hate group. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, that is right.
Yeah. So thanks, Greg, for the call. Let's go next to Chris in Middleton. Hello, Chris.
Good morning. Good show. As a reporter, I did some covering of the Gordon Posse Comitatus case in North Dakota, and that's how I got to know the Southern Poverty Law Center. I understand that, of course, there's going to be more right-wing hate groups than left-wing, but I see a phenomenon here, like the ACLU, where you started to target really just the lefties for your membership, and part of it too is that you're telling us what we want to hear. You know, I'm a liberal myself, but I really don't like the groups that are, like I say, are just telling us what we want to hear. I'd like to see a little more very conscious, assertive non-fighting. I can't come up with a name.
What's your response to that, Mark?
Well, I'm not sure I got the point. Other than, I think maybe what Chris is saying is that, you know, we should direct ourselves more to the center. That we should be trying to convince people on the conservative right that things are going on in this country that are bad. I mean, look, we try to put out objective information to the extent that it's probably true. Certainly, much of the right, both the far right and the more the right, sort of closer to the center, doesn't like a lot of what we have to say. But I do things. For instance, I go on Fox News from time to time. That is certainly trying to speak to a different demographic than, say, when you go on MSNBC. So I'm not really sure what we can do. I mean, one of the things that has happened is as some of the so-called Christian right groups have become more ugly, I think, in their anti-gay activities, we've begun to list a few. I mentioned earlier in the conversation the American Family Association. That's a group, a fairly large group, $25 million a year, that kind of size group, based in Tupelo, Mississippi. And they have become, certainly in my opinion, incredibly ugly in the kinds of things they say. It's not merely quite remarkable allegation that gay men are child molesters, but, this is a group that in the last couple of years has made statements like the Holocaust, the Nazi Holocaust was caused by gay men. They have said things like, incredibly, the problem with black people on welfare is that welfare rewards people who, quote, rut like rabbits. So, we felt that we had to come out and criticize a group like AFA directly and list them, I think rightly so, as a hate group. But that has certainly produced some pushback from these kinds of groups and their allies on the political right. How to avoid that while staying honest to our mission, honest to the facts about what really does make a hate group, I don't know.
I think Chris was also, if I'm not mistaken, trying to say that you were skewing your report to appease or please liberals.
I think that's really not true. I mean, for instance, the comparison between extremism on the left and the right, much talked about among certain circles on the right, is really a bogus one. And the idea that the left is just as bad and scary at this point in our history, it's simply not true. And, what I would point our listeners to, Chris as well in particular, is quite a number of academic studies, which have nothing to do with the Southern Poverty Law Center, that show precisely that. So I'm not denying that there is a radical left. I'm arguing that it's very small and vastly less deadly than what we're seeing on the extreme right.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Let's go to Eric in Milwaukee next. Hello, Eric.
Good morning. Thank you for the show and for your guest. My question is, when I hear discussions about hate groups and so forth, I don't really hear in terms of who are the individuals or the members of these hate groups. For example, are they both men and women? Is it primarily just white men and not white women? If so, why? What's the educational background? What's their income level? What is the philosophy upon which they base it upon? Why is it that there aren't more, Asian American or Latin American or African American hate groups? It seems to me that there's a particular demographic of the male gender that seems it's so it has the right to superimpose its will upon other Americans, not bearing in mind the genocidal history of America of the indigenous people. So just wonder who are these people, why there isn't a greater spotlight on who they are, why they are, and why there aren't other members of society who seem to be strongly proposing their.
We get it, Eric. So who are?
Let me try. A good question. Mm-hmm. Let me try and answer it. First of all, the bulk of people in the movement we cover are white, and I think that has a lot to do with the sort of entitlement that white people are losing, you know, often called white privilege, the you know, what we white people have gotten through the history of our country. I mean, look, whites have been dominant in this country, obviously, for most of its history. That's changing. And it's provoking a real reaction. So, you know, one thing to say about all of this is that good, bad, or ugly, what we are seeing on the right is largely a response to real things that are occurring in the real world. These aren't just a pack of mentally ill people. Now, who are the people in these movements? Aside from that, let me say, I said most of them are white. Still, we list more, I think, over 150 black supremacist, or as we list them, black separatist groups, and some of them really ugly groups like the New Black Panther Party, you know, desperately anti-white, anti-gay, anti-Jewish, and so on. Let me speak a little bit more about the members. When you look at the patriot groups, there have been some academic studies that have shown that they are quite representative of the population, at least the white population. What I mean by that is that they tend to come from all kinds of socioeconomic levels and educational backgrounds. The groups are not dominated by doctors and lawyers, to be sure, by highly educated people, but those kinds of people are involved. So it's a little more representative of a broader swath of the population than one might think. Now, when one looks at groups like the Klan and neo-Nazi skinheads and so on, the demographics change according to the type of group that we're talking about. For instance, Klan groups are virtually all rural. They are obviously all white. They do include quite a few women. They didn't back in the day in the 1920s, the second era Klan or the first era Klan during Reconstruction. Then the Klan was, by rule, all male. But there are quite a lot of women in the Klan today, and the Klan groups tend to be centered really around families. You look at neo-Nazi skinheads, they are an urban phenomenon, and there's they really come from a street culture of violence. When you look at other kinds of neo-Nazi groups that aren't into this kind of street thuggery, there are often people who are quite educated. We see an awful lot of college-educated people in that world. So there's quite a bit of difference from group to group or type of group to group in terms of the demographics. Mm-hmm. I think their philosophy, that's a big question. But, you know, generally I think these groups or individuals within the groups see the United States as essentially an extension of white European society, not as some kind of melting pot, and they feel that they are being dispossessed, that the core population of the United States is being dispossessed, and they're angry and resentful, and in some cases violent as a result.
Interesting question from Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Do these groups grow larger when a Democrat takes the White House? How far back do you go in terms of, we mentioned they jumped when President Obama was first elected, but what about other Democrats in the White House?
Well, it's a very good question. I'm looking at a graph right now, a bar chart that we did, looking at the last 15 years or so of the militia groups. And that's precisely what it shows. The militia, the first wave of the militia movement from 94 till the end of the 90s was all under Bill Clinton. And there was a very huge rise. And a part of what drove that rise was real opposition to gun control. And I'm sure our listeners remember that Clinton, in fact, passed some fairly major gun control laws. When George W. Bush came into office, the groups receded quite a lot. The Patriot groups in particular almost didn't quite disappear, but they dropped down from close to 1,000 to about 150 during that period. And then, of course, Obama, a Democrat, comes in and the groups just take off. So there's something to that. I think the idea that you're not represented in the White House about issues that matter very much to you make you more inclined to go out and join some kind of group.
We're talking with Mark Potok. He is a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and we're talking about the Southern Poverty Law Center's new report, The Year in Hate and Extremism, which shows that the number of hate groups, especially the number of anti-government or militia groups or patriot groups have declined since the re-election of President Obama in 2012. And we're talking about why that is and what might happen in the future. We'll talk about that next and continue to take your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the decline in hate groups in the United States, according to a new report from the Southern Poverty Law Center. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. According to the report, there was a dramatic rise in the radical right following the 2008 election of President Obama and the collapse of the economy. But for the first time since then, there was a decline in those radical groups following President Obama's re-election in 2012. One factor our guest says is that the extreme groups were deflated by the re-election of President Obama. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him. Mark Potok is the author of this report. He is a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so what do we think is going to happen? What factors are going to influence the number of hate groups this year, Mark?
Well, let me mention some of the factors that we think that we've not mentioned so far that played into what happened last year, and perhaps that can give us a sense of what's coming. One of the pieces of it is, of course, the improving economy. That has kind of taken some of the anger out of the air. I think an important piece, in fact, has been law enforcement crackdowns on these groups. There have been two major things that have happened in the last few years. In the fall of 2011, the FBI described so-called sovereign citizens. These are people who believe that they're not obliged to follow any federal law or pay federal taxes at all. The FBI described sovereign citizens movement as a domestic terrorist movement. And that seemed to signal a real crackdown on these groups. We saw a lot of action after that. In addition, of course, in August of 2012, Wade Page, the neo-Nazi, murdered six people at Sikh Temple near Milwaukee. That was quite a spectacular attack, to put it mildly, and that also seemed to bring on real heat from law enforcement around the country. So that, I think, is a piece of it as well. We're also at a moment that feels, at least to me, similar to the end of the 1990s, when we saw really the militia movement just peter out to nothing. The movement had been then, and has been over the last few years, more recently, predicting all kinds of doom. They're constantly going on about how Obama is just about to seize all Americans' weapons, that martial law is about to be imposed, and those who resist will be, thrown into concentration camps secretly built by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that there will be an invasion by the UN, et cetera, et cetera. And at some point, when groups make these claims repeatedly and nothing really seems to happen to back it up, again, the wind goes out of their sails. So there's a similarity, I think, to the end of the 90s. How will that play out in the coming years? I suspect we'll see these groups continue to go down unless certain kinds of things happen. I do think that if a gun control comes back to the fore, which seems rather unlikely, that absolutely could animate quite a lot of these groups, pump some life back into them. The other piece of it, the other possibility, which is more likely, but I think still relatively unlikely, is if comprehensive immigration reform really does begin to move in the Congress. A lot of these groups are very opposed to immigration, and that, of course, is related to the sort of racial demographic question, because most immigration to this country has been non-white over the last decade or two, and so that simply amps up the feeling of we're losing our country. So I think if those things were to surge forward in the Congress, we might see these groups grow again, but otherwise I expect that it's more likely that they'll continue to diminish.
Let's go to Randy in Madison next. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. Well, what is your
Good.
Question?
The gentleman talking, I really like what you're talking about and what you're saying. I do differ you on one thing. I happen to be Jewish and gay. What happened during prior to World War II and after and now, the hate crimes of the Jews, what you're seeing now with these religious groups like in Arizona and across the country, is just the beginning. I'm sorry, hate, but one way or the other, hate is hate. It's got to end. I don't care whatever religious affiliation they may or may not be, they do not. It's not that they just don't want us to be gay. They don't want us around. And that is very sad, and that is very scary.
Yeah, so he sees hate in full force today, Mark?
Well, I mean, Randy's right in many ways. I mean, the Arizona law and the copycat laws that were proposed in three or four other states are appalling. To me, they're obviously wildly unconstitutional. They violate every idea of public accommodations being open to all people. So there's a lot of ugliness out there in the land. And as we've discussed earlier today, a lot of it is in the legislatures, the state legislatures, and to some extent in the House of Representatives as well. But is this the 30s? Is this the run-up to European-style fascism? I don't think so. That I don't believe. It is a rough time. I think what's really happening is that the country, like many Western European countries as well, is going through a very serious change, a demographic and social and cultural change that is dramatic in historical terms, and that we are seeing a backlash. It's gone on for several years now. And maybe it's worth thinking a little bit about the past. I mean, when the slaves were freed and got the right to vote initially, when women got the vote, when Catholics were immigrating to this country in the 1920s in very large numbers at a time when the country was dominated by Protestants. The gay rights movement, the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement, all of these things have caused backlashes and sometimes very violent ones. But ultimately, these things have subsided, and I think that's what will happen here as well. This backlash, one hopes, will play itself out, and at the end will be a better country.
We've had a couple of callers, and we don't have time for them, so I'll try to rephrase their question briefly. Did you look at the relationship between hate groups and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which models legislation that has been passing in many state legislatures across the country?
Well, the groups we cover, certainly we know about ALEC. Certainly it has been very important in pushing state legislatures and politics in this country in general further and further to the right. But the connection of ALEC to the groups we cover, there really isn't much of a connection between ALEC and most of the groups we cover. There are some exceptions when one looks at the anti-gay groups, the anti-immigration groups, and so on. That's not really a major part of the world we're looking at.
In less than 30 seconds, will you someday not have to put this group together or this report together because hate groups will not exist?
I fear that day will never come. I'm afraid that my job is quite secure.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Mark Potok is a senior fellow at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And the report on hate groups is posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.